From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 12th day of April, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson, discuss the E15 Biden administration announcement. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day and hear all about the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services. Oh, and we'll have Jared Bernstein from the White House on, along with Scott Irwin from the University of Illinois, and Gas Buddies Patrick DeHaan, a packed show. Stay with us here at Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn today at $7.76 and a quarter, up 11 3/4. July 7.72 and a half, 13 3/4 higher. In December, 7.31. That finished up 13 cents for the day. July soybeans at 19 3/4 higher, 16.60 and a half. The settlement price, new crop November at 15.07, up 21 1/4. The wheat futures in the soft red up 23 1/2 at $11.12 1/2. Livestock futures finished the live cattle $1.50 higher. The feeders up $1.02 1/2, and lean hogs were $3.45 higher. Crude oil at $100.68 a barrel, up $6.39, and gasoline 14 9/10 cents higher. Wayne Nelson is here from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, to discuss what happened in Chicago. Hi, Wayne. The news dropped this morning about 4 a.m. that the Biden administration would be allowing E15 this summer. You've been talking about this for the better part of a month on the radio. What'd you think of the announcement?
I was thrilled to death that somebody finally caught on that this is a really good thing to do to try to help our to help the whole U.S. and the price of gasoline at the pump. I'm just a little bit disappointed with some of the details that he didn't mandate E10 going to E15, at least for the next few months, to try to get us through the rough part of it.
Indeed. He could have gone to probably E12 and not worried about any vehicle. E15, of course, for 2001 and newer vehicles. How did this all play into the corn market today?
Well, it gave us a little strength. I mean, there's a lot of things going on besides just the E15. I mean, the war, the weather, everything like the inflation, everything like that. But it sure gave us a little boost here today. I think that it added another 6-8 cents to the corn today. You know, we were up 10 to 12, but I think 6-8 cents that could be attributed to the E15.
And soybeans were up around 20 cents on the day, just following along with corn?
Well, I think that, you know, as we look here and we continue to talk about how the war is going to drag on, and what's going to be going on with that. Number one, we look at and seeing that they're not really planting soybeans in the Ukraine. We're looking at some of the other areas that might not, the South America might not add acres because of the fertilizer and chemical restrictions of possibly having supplies and that. And I think that our protein needs, as we look at a lot of things, are going to still stay high. So I think it just basically, along with all of the other things we talked about, the inflation, the war, everything going on that way, helped push the beans up too.
Here in the United States, farmers have had some time now to think about this prospective plantings report. Anybody changing their minds as to what their crop rotations will look like?
We do have a few of the individuals over here are going a lot more corn than what they thought they would a month ago because of the differential in price that way. But all in all, we're just waiting to get in the field, and everybody's just very anxious to try out their new planters. And I think a lot of guys do have new planters this year, and they're going to be able to plant about 20% faster. And they're really happy about that, looking at the delays we're seeing and the way the weather forecast is lining up, Todd.
Yeah, what I know about new planters is that they'll plant 20% faster, but they might in that first year have 20% downtime trying to figure out how to use them.
This is very true. I tell you what, the technology on these is very, very complicated. And like the guy told me, that it was, had his planter was in, but he had to take his tractor over, and they had to sync it up for a 2-day period and leave it at the shop. He says, I just hope they can keep talking to each other.
Yeah, I know. I went to planter school, and my brothers asked me whether I thought I could plant with it, I think a year later or something. I said, well, yeah, I think I could, but it's so much technology, I probably could figure it out. I'd have maybe a tougher time with the tractor than the planter, but they work so well together. It's unbelievable. Set them on a line and they go. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Well, of course, we got the CPI. It was up 8.5%. And that's another thing that's a little worrisome to what we're looking at. And how do we have a soft landing and not get into recession? But all in all, good day in the commodity markets.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, President Biden today announced a move to make E15 available across the nation this summer. The announcement came as the president works to bring down the price of gasoline across the country. A U.S. EPA will issue a national emergency waiver allowing gasoline blended at the higher rate of 15% ethanol from June 1 to September 15. Agricultural economist Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University says it could make a difference on two fronts, lowering the price of gas and increasing demand for corn.
I don't know. It could. And it depends on, you know, again, how price sensitive some of the consumers are. When you look at a 15% blend and you look at the price per gallon, you know, the 15% blends have a lower price per gallon. However, when you do the math on, well, you're also getting slightly lower mileage rates. I don't know if people will do the math on that and say, I'm better off or worse off going with a 10% blend versus a 15% blend.
The expected waiver would allow E15 to continue to be sold this summer across the nation at some 2,000 blender pumps, mostly in the Midwest. Patrick DeHaan of Gas Buddy thinks it's a good idea.
It is certainly renewable fuel that has been extensively tested. The EPA says that vehicles 2001 and newer can use up to E15, up to 15% ethanol. And like I said, there's a price advantage. The price of corn right now, the price of ethanol rather, is lower than that of gasoline. So generally, ethanol acts to reduce prices. And it gives motorists another option. Those that want to opt for E15 generally can save 5 to 10 cents a gallon over that of what regular unleaded is.
Biden administration officials say the emergency use waiver covers 20-day periods, will be issued closer to June 1, and will stay in place as long as gasoline prices remain inflated as caused by the war in Ukraine. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where the Secretary of Agriculture has said eggs might be in shorter supply this Easter because of demand, of course, and in part because of avian influenza.
A lot of folks are going to spend time with their children preparing the Easter baskets. A lot of families are going to get together and for brunches and so forth and for other meals where eggs will be consumed. So I think there's probably going to be strong demand. So that may create the impression of shortages, but I don't anticipate significant shortages at this point.
Avian influenza is a disease caused by migrating birds, and while there is not likely to be an issue with egg supply in the Easter time frame as the year passes, there may be some issues later on. Let's look at today's Ag News. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of M, to assess the Biden administration's announcement that it will open E15 for summertime use across the nation. Thank you for being with us. I saw on your Twitter account that you had something to say about this issue and whether it will really make a difference. Can you tell me about your views?
Well, my views are that this announcement is largely going to have a very marginal or negligible impact on gasoline prices overall. Now, people out in your ag listeners maybe think that, you know, I'm expressing some kind of anti-ethanol view. I'm just basing that on the basic arithmetic of how much E15 we're using now and the likely impact of this announcement on how much E15 that we're going to use in the future. The first important fact is that E15 usage in the big picture is a tiny sliver of the overall U.S. gasoline use. So even if it grows rapidly, it's still going to be a very small part of overall gasoline consumption. So just the basic arithmetic is it even if it's wildly successful, it's not going to affect the overall picture that much in terms of cost savings for the entire U.S. gasoline market.
Is there anything else that you saw within the announcements that you found of interest?
Well, I think that it's important to realize that this is a very temporary emergency waiver. Where it's going in the future is very hard to predict. I think that this should be classified as probably something that is supportive of the continued trajectory of recent growth in E15, which in and of itself is good for ethanol and ag overall. But I don't think that it's a real game changer. You know, there's still significant impediments to expanding E15. One is, of course, simply making it permanent year-round. Secondly, there are still some big states, as I understand it, that have E10 regulations or laws in place. Two that I believe, I don't think they've changed, as far as I know, or California, New York, for example, big states. And there's still liability and labeling issues that are out there. So it's a real open question, even, you know, if the waiver is made permanent, how rapid E15 expansion could be.
U.S. EPA under the Trump administration opened E15 up for summertime use. That was countered by the courts. This time around, the Biden administration says because they are authorizing through emergency use, that won't be the case. Do you have a different take?
I'm not a lawyer, and I wouldn't pretend to know. Maybe, maybe not. But if we know of anything in the biofuels area, I'll be surprised if it's not challenged in the courts, ultimately by the crude oil refining industry. And maybe it can be justified under emergency provisions. So how important is that? That's not going to be permanent. You know, the permanent waiver then goes back to the Trump administration proposal and the courts knocking it down. This gets a lot of attention, but it's hard for me to see how this turns into something permanent, given our recent history that you just talked about.
Finally, turn your attention to the RFS broadly. How do you see what the Biden administration has been doing in this area since it took office?
Honestly, Todd, I've been stunned. That's the only way I can really honestly describe it. The Biden administration is, you know, advertises itself as being, you know, the most friendly administration ever towards climate mitigation policies. And yet it is as friendly and in the pocket of crude oil refiners as the Trump administration was. They have made a series of decisions in recent months that have absolutely kneecapped the RFS. And I'm really surprised that hasn't gotten as much coverage as I expected that it would. But they are making decision after decision that I regard as fundamentally hostile to the RFS.
That's agricultural economist Scott Irwin from the University of Illinois. I spoke with him earlier today, and just before I was on the phone with Scott, I talked with Jake Bernstein. He's on the Biden administration's Council of Economic Advisors. I asked him this question and received an answer that really didn't include any biofuel. One other issue, what view does the Biden administration take on renewable diesel?
If you look at our administration's renewable agenda, it's very much focused on clean energy, wind, solar, electric vehicles. And so this is very much a walk and chew gum, a both and not either or moment. We have to help households deal with the current pressures they're facing at the pump. And we're doing that by both urging oil producers to make sure that they're producing adequate supplies, making sure that any cost savings to these producers are passed along. You know, the rockets and feathers phenomena the president has talked about, where oil comes down and Prices don't come down as quickly as they should. This is something that this president is not okay with. At the same time that we're plotting a path to true renewables through electric vehicles, solar, wind, including a quite ambitious tax credit agenda to help create significant jobs and get America to be a leader in that sector, whether it's battery production, solar panels, wind turbines. There's a lot of good work to be done there.
Again, that was Jake Bernstein from earlier today. He's part of President Biden's Council of Economic Advisors. We had been having a discussion about the E15 announcement made by the president today, and then I asked him about renewable diesel. His answer then turned to true renewables, and he talked about electric vehicles, solar, and wind energy. Don Day from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming is traveling today, but he did leave us this weather forecast.
A strong spring storm is going to dominate the weather forecast across the United States throughout the rest of this week and even into the weekend. The storm is going coast to coast. Late in the weekend and on Monday, we saw some really needed rain and snow coming into Washington, Oregon, and Central and Northern California, then into the Northern Rockies. The storm system is going to blow up and become a major winter storm over North Dakota, eastern areas of Montana, northern South Dakota, and a lot of central and northern Minnesota. Those areas could see in excess of a foot, foot and a half of snow in some areas. The good news is, despite the winter storm, there's going to be upwards to 1 to 3 inches of water in that snow, especially over the drought areas of western North Dakota and eastern Montana. So that'll be good for them. Good moisture, but it's going to come in the form of snow. Severe weather across the Midwest and parts of the Corn Belt as this system heads east and collides with warmer air. This is also going to bring heavy rain again to the lower Delta areas. We're going to see significant rain across southern Missouri, Arkansas, parts of Tennessee, southern areas of Illinois, Indiana, down into Louisiana. There will be some needed rain moving into East Texas. Unfortunately, despite all of this stormy weather, the wheat areas of eastern Colorado, central and western Kansas, central and western areas of Nebraska, across the Texas and Oklahoma panhandle areas, they're going to get a lot of wind. They're going to get chilly, but they're not going to see any moisture. So those southern areas of the plains across to the desert southwest are going to remain dry here for another week. But the pattern is going to remain active with two more weather systems traversing the U.S. next week, one towards the middle of next week and one towards the weekend of the 23rd.
Again, our thanks go to Don Day for leaving us that weather forecast. We've been talking a whole lot this program about energy across the planet, in particularly in the United States, as it's related to the high price of gasoline. I want to continue that conversation with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services. He joins us once a month to do it anyway. Hey, thank you, Stephen, for being with us. I made note that I believe it was the Saudis told the world, maybe it was the European Union, that it could not, or more likely would not, move to pump enough oil to replace that which was coming from Russia, and that the Western allies are trying to eliminate from their shelves. Can you tell me about that a little bit?
That's been their policy here for the past few months, in which both the UAE and Saudi Arabia has refused to expand their production, which they could do by about 2.5 million barrels pretty easily to compensate for some of the Russian sanctions that has reduced their availability. The Saudis believe that they want to cater to the Russians politically. The Russians are a member of OPEC Plus, which is an alliance set up back in 2020 to restrict output levels overall. So they have an alliance with Russia themselves in terms of this output pact, And they've had some problems, certainly, with the Biden administration in terms of, one, the policies with respect to Yemen and our outreach to Iran in terms of trying to lift the sanctions. In addition, the Saudi MBS, who's actually the senior advisor to the king, has certainly been a problem in terms of the U.S. with respect to the issue with the killing of Khashoggi. And Biden has refused to even meet with him, instead preferring to meet with King Salman.
As a follow-up on this subject, the Saudis, I believe, said that the world would come up about 7 million barrels short a day?
Well, yes, and that would be for all of OPEC. They certainly, if you were to compensate for all of Russian production, and Russia producing over 10 million currently, is still exporting oil at discounted rates to China, India, and some other countries that have not sanctioned their oil. Those rates, the discounts, are record large, whereby Saudis actually have record high premiums for their oil in Asia because of the increased demand. So the Saudis are actually able to sell their oil at a very reasonable price and makes up for some of the shortfall that they would gain from actually increasing their production.
What does it mean for the price of gasoline in the future here in the United States?
Well, for gasoline itself, we do export gasoline. The U.S. is in much better shape than we would have been if this was done 10 years ago because of the shale revolution. We've become independent modest energy exporter relative to the times back in 2002 when we were a large energy importer, importing as much as 10 million barrels per day. Now we're basically even in terms of what we use and what we produce. So gasoline prices are contingent upon the world situation, our own refining capacity, all of which goes into the mix, and along with inflationary biases that also can help lift prices during times of potential shortages.
Thank you, Steve. Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services and joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon.